Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 14th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. We'll take a look at the day's agricultural news in a moment, including two views of the work being done in Hong Kong at the WTO. And Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us just after the bottom of the hour. Along the way, we'll hear about a blogger whose business is to look at agriculture in the upper Midwest. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Wednesday afternoon, December futures in the hard red winter wheat pit finished 8 cents higher at $3.61. In Chicago, the soft red winter wheat for December contract finished 5.5 cents higher at $3.09 and one half. March contract there at $3.23 and three quarters, up 5 and a quarter for the day. December corn on this Wednesday at $1.94 and a quarter in Chicago, a penny and a quarter lower. The March futures at $2.07 and a quarter, off 1 and one half, and the May contract at $2.16 and a quarter, down a penny and a half. December futures for next year at $2.44 a bushel, down 1 and one quarter for the day. January soybeans, $5.92 and a half. They were down a nickel. The March contract, $6.03 and a half, down 4 and three quarters, and the May futures at $6.11 and a quarter, off 2 cents. November beans unchanged for next year at $6.23 and a half. December bean meal, $1.92.50. They were off $3.20. December bean oil at $20.91. We're up one for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle at 114.82 and a half, unchanged. December live cattle at 94.60, up 87 and a half cents. And December lean hogs at $62.62 and a half cents. We're up 25 for the day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start not with the markets, but I want to talk a little bit about land values. I made a note that the Des Moines Register ran a piece, it was either today or yesterday, where they show the average farmland price there at $29.14. That's up 11 percentage points from last year, or about $285 an acre. Had word last night about a farm outside of Bloomington, not too terribly far in here in the state of Illinois, that sold for $52.50. There were 200 acres in that track, and it was not a 1031. These are fairly large prices in what's been a very, very depressed marketplace.
Well, you know, as we've talked about before, Todd, the land price and the Chicago Board of Trade country elevator price of cash corn are very definitely two different commodities. One is a lifetime investment, and the other one is reflective of the actual cash price of that commodity on a daily traded commodity futures exchange. The land prices are, you know, just absolutely been a bonanza for the last 10 years. What we're seeing here in a local area is the smaller tracks seem to be a little bit sluggish and harder to move, whereas the larger tracks are still demanding quite a premium. It looks like from everything that I can see is that it's a good investment. The prices are still very strong, and it's business as usual, and it's one of the one of the old sayings is that you can be a millionaire on paper, but if you actually own 1,000 acres, everybody in the county knows your first name.
That's right. You're absolutely correct.
And last name as well.
You bet. Let's talk about what happened at the Board of Trade today. I saw an interesting little bit. I think this came off the DTN, and their man on the floor, and I think that's Wilhelmy, if I don't I think I've got that right, but he was suggesting that the market would go one of two ways today, and it would depend on what happened in the metals and how people were getting out of those and whether they would liquidate out of the gold and buy into the marketplace for commodities for the grains and the oil seeds, or whether they would simply push the market a bit lower. Were either of those things that something that happened today, or was there?
Well, you know, Gary does have some interesting points, and of course, you know, the metals market, if I remember right, did sell off a little bit today, quite a bit, and also the U.S. dollar sold off. The trade deficit was quite large. My particular take is any time we raise interest rates a quarter of a point, it basically stuck a pin in the in the inflation balloon, so to speak. And let's face it, it's a lot of the oil-rich Arab countries that are oil producers that are the big players in the metals market here over the last 30 days. This is $500 an ounce. Gold is pretty high-priced commodity. Unfortunately, I'm not a big believer in the correlation between the value of metal and the price of corn and soybeans, unfortunately. But what we can always say is there's very big extremes in those marketplaces. And I think it was one of the fundamental rallies why we saw corn, soybeans, and wheat rally on Sunday night. But there was other fundamental factors involved, too.
Just to check in on it, the gold price at 521 yesterday, off 15 bucks at 506 today, had a high of 513 and a low down at that 506 level. Comparatively speaking, when we take a look at what happened at the Mercantile Exchange, the marketplace there in the beans off 5 cents today. Corn futures were off about a penny and a quarter, but they've had a couple of good up days in the last couple of
days. The open interest has been extremely short, and the flat price values have been just extremely cheap. And you know, another wise tale is you know, the Asian bird flu has helped create some of that negative tone, and the commodity funds have piled on major short positions in corn, soybeans, and wheat. Near as we can tell, the Chinese have bought some pretty good volumes of soybeans. Their exports of corn still to be healthy, but not as much as you might expect on past historic monthly trends. So generally, the South American farmer has been sold out of beans. We're the only game in town, and hopefully somewhere along the line, country elevators here in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks can pay a $6 bill on some cash soybeans. But I really wonder if that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a 50-50 chance in my estimation that we'll see that done.
You know, the last time you were on Commodity Week, which I think was a couple of weeks ago now, I had asked a question at some point whether you were all still bearish the commodity market, and everybody sort of jumped in quickly and said no, but I'm not sure that you were all bullish the market either. You were just kind of neutral and didn't think it would really go any lower. It's made new contract lows since then, but it has finished the last 2 weeks unchanged since that time. So, in fact, everybody was thinking that the market probably wasn't going to move terribly far, and I think you were all right. I've been meaning to ask a question because all three of the gentlemen that were in that week happened to clear through ADM, and I was wondering whether you had heard something out of ADM at that point that suggested the marketplace might hold steady or turn higher.
Well, I think when you add up, unfortunately, the ages of Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, and Paul Cooley, you'll probably get over 130 years of age. And I'll tell you what, almost that 100 years of experience almost. But the reason is that they were horribly flat price cheap. The harvest was over with. The world was basically the only market in town to buy a lot of corn and soybeans and wheat is the U.S. It's very basically dry, and some the western U.S., and I think it was more of a fundamental value. Chris, we're all hearing this whisper out in the countryside, more beans being planted, less corn, and I think, you know, we've all are close friends in the third place and have all seen history unfold before, and when we were looking at that $1.75 cash corn, you know, that's cheap enough anywhere in the world. And, you know, one of the things that we all kind of advocated, too, that the Secretary of Agriculture instead of worrying so much about the WTO, needs to get the freight moving in the U.S., get cheaper freight rates going, and do something about the flat price, because the input costs are just unbelievable. And I think that was where we were all three coming from. Nothing so much from the company.
And you're still at that point where you're feeling the market has gone low enough for
corn to cash? Well, you know, the commodity trend, you know, as far as the computer trend model, if March corn closes above 208, the trend is higher in corn. And as long as January beans stay above 580, you know, the trend is up in the soybean market. And we are of the opinion that farmers are rewarding some of the markets here, particularly selling in the deferred contracts in corn, and also selling cash beans on the rally are all indicating that they're marketing their grain very carefully in the days ahead, and that's probably good business.
You alluded to the fact that it's been light volume. Of course, we're headed into the holiday season, and we know that things can move very quickly one way or the other. Would you advise that people have something in place so that they can catch those jumps to the higher side should they happen?
You bet. And of course, we mentioned one time that, you know, when the one customer called me and I got a hold, he called me right away to call his elevator and all the lines were busy. And I said, well, after this, you have a pickup truck or I'll make offers above the market. So, you know, there's when this happens, you know, the trend for the last 10 to 15 years, it used to be walk into the country elevator and make the sales, and about 80 to 90% of all the sales now are done over the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be there, get there early, make the offers above the market, and also keep one phone ready to call your broker to take, you know, opposite or steps to help you in the marketing program as well.
From the bean market, what are we hearing out of South America and that crop?
Well, you know, near as we can tell, we do hear the word rust. Argentina needs a rain in the worst way. We understand the private weather people are encouraging encouraging at the noon forecast that we could see some rain as early as this weekend and in the middle of next week. So the Argentine weather forecast is improved. My general impression is that that bean acreage will be a little smaller than some of the market people have penciled in.
Paul, I always look forward to our Wednesday discussions.
Well, have a profitable day, Todd, and drive safe.
I will. You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons and, of course, on Wednesday mornings, too.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's Mike Searles tells us this afternoon that a snow advisory is in effect for northern Illinois, although that did expire, I suppose, at noon. Let's take a look at what his forecast for this evening is. Tonight, cloudy, he says, with a rain, some snow ending, and not as windy. Wind switching to the southwest at 5 to 15 miles an hour, lows ranging from around 20 in the north to around 35. In southern Indiana. And tomorrow, the sky should be cloudy. It'd be a bit cooler. Highs in the upper 20s around Rockford, Illinois, to the lower 30s near Evansville, Indiana. The extended forecast for the two-state region, Friday through Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, windy, some occasional snow and flurries, especially in the north and central sections. Saturday in northern Indiana, some clouds, a few snow showers there as well. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds and some sunshine. Agricultural news, of course, dominated by the WTO. The first day of that meeting, the World Trade Organization ministers in Hong Kong, is now in the books. Day one saw European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson compare U.S. food aid programs with Europe's export subsidy program, and little evidence of progress in the talks yet. Dave Samuelson is in Hong Kong. He's Senior Director of Congressional Relations for the American Farm Bureau Federation, and Samuelson says he remains optimistic the Hong Kong meeting will end with an agreement to at least continue talks into 2006.
Our expectations here at the talks are that we're going to come out of this, we're going to have a good hard week of really intensive discussion, we hope. People really grapple with the issues, and what we want to have come out of this is knowledge that early in 06, that we're going to have a way to get finally down to the final formulas and disciplines that we need to move ahead to have an agreement later in 2006.
If the Hong Kong meeting does end successfully, Samuelson says a new global trade deal could be near completion by this time next year. But he says time is running out.
Sometime in March or April of 06, we'll get together, get those final disciplines together, those final formulas on tariff cutting, domestic support changes, and the export competition area, so that we can make the agreements, everybody can figure out what they mean in 06, come into hopefully about this time next year, get the agreement all wrapped up, and then we need time to take it in for the U.S., take it to our Congress, and to get it approved before the Trade Promotion Authority lapses on July 1st, 2007. So we're operating on a deadline here.
But most agree the European Union must take at least a modest step forward during the Hong Kong meeting. And Samuelson says European negotiators are beginning to feel the heat.
Right now we're at the point where the pressure is on the European Union to really engage on the tariff issues, on the market access issues, because they responded to what was an aggressive U.S. proposal of tariff cutting with something that was a lot less, not acceptable to the U.S., not acceptable to the G20, to a lot of the other countries of the world that said you've just got to go further if we're going to see we're going to have real trade reform come out of this discussion. So there's a lot of back and forth on that issue, and we hope that they'll focus on that this week and make some real progress.
And according to Samuelson, Europe's refusal to compromise on market access may change as the Hong Kong meeting wears on.
They've come into this very strong with a lot to say about that, of how they can't go any further. But this is a negotiation. It's give and take. And at the kind of point where people can say, yes, it's time to negotiate, yes, it's time to make the deal, I think they'll, you know, everybody will have to get together if we're going to have progress. Maybe we aren't there this week, though I think the fact that everybody's together and talking should help the process.
Samuelson says treatment of least developed nations and cotton are also issues to watch in Hong Kong this week. Audio for our story from the WTO was provided by Tom Brand of KFEQ at the Ag Info Center in St. Joseph, Missouri. He's a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. While the American Farm Bureau Federation agrees with the Bush administration's stance on the WTO, the National Farmers Union president says he's much more concerned. The U.S. government's insistence, he says, on putting its ag proposal forward for debate at the World Trade Organization ministerial meeting in Hong Kong this week worries him. Interview President Dave Fredrickson, who's in Hong Kong for this meeting, says the U.S. proposal could eliminate the nation's ability to provide American farmers and ranchers a safety net, and at the same time when low prices and higher energy costs are hammering U.S. producers. That proposal, by the way, includes a 60% reduction in aggregate measures of support, including provisions to support a producer safety net. Still, some WTO member nations argue the U.S. proposal does not do enough to reduce support measures. But Fredrickson says the WTO is not keeping the best interest of U.S. farmers in mind. Instead of starting with a goal of improving farmer and rancher incomes, Fredrickson says farmers are asked to give up more than they get in return. According to Fredrickson, the U.S. is being targeted because it's a rich market. But while the U.S. is being forced to import more, Fredrickson says the nation's not seeing any improvements in exports of U.S. ag goods. He says that's been evidenced by the decline of the U.S. ag trade balance since the Uruguay Round Agreement took effect in 1991. And finally today, the U of I is offering up a set of seminars on nutrients, tillage, and carbon trading. In addition to exploring the latest information on nutrient and conservation practices, producers can find out whether new opportunities in carbon trading can pay big dividends at the upcoming Illinois Regional Tillage Seminars. They're scheduled for February. Stay tuned for more information on that right here on AM 580. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, Stu Ellis is a farm blogger. You don't know what that is? I'll tell you more in this story about a place on the internet called the Farmgate. You surf the net looking for all kinds of things you're interested in. You read volumes of material, look at loads of pages, and it takes way too much time. Now, you'd like to find one place to learn all about what the land-grant institutions in the Corn Belt have been doing. And if all was right in the world, you could sound off about the issues and the research. Congratulations, there's such a place. It's called The Farm Gate.
The Farm Gate is a blog for agriculture that provides some two-way traffic information going to individuals and allowing them to respond with some concepts and ideas and verbal retaliation if they don't really happen to agree with what's being said.
That was University of Illinois Extension's Stu Ellis. He's a blogger. You can think of him as the MC of the Farm Gate.
What I will do is to search through websites, dozens of them, throughout land-grant universities in the upper Midwest, looking for topics that are going to be of interest to people who produce corn, beans, wheat, hogs, cattle, whether it be production-type issues, whether it's farm economic, farm management-type issues. Those types of things are what I'm looking for. And maybe some specialist has done a real in-depth study about something, but it may take 2 or 3 days to read. Well, what I will do is to condense and synthesize that into a short Reader's Digest version for someone who just doesn't have that much time.
As the blogger, Stu Ellis, will pick those topics, but you can write back. It's easy to do. Just fill in the blanks at the end of the article you'd like to discuss and click on the post button. You'll be blogging too. The FarmGate blog can be found on the web at www.farmgate.uiuc.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now to take a look at this Wednesday afternoon cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain, Terre Haute, Indiana. Hi, Kay.
Hi, Kay.
Well,
hello, Todd.
Hi, T. Hi, Kay. It all works the same for me. I've got a question for you on basis. Has it tracked pretty well over the last couple of days with the big moves in the corn, in the bean pit and the move in the corn pit?
Well, of course, I was gone all last week, so I'm a little bit out of the loop. But, Todd, really, train values have been steadily increasing up to this point, and now then they've kind of leveled out maybe just a tad weaker. As far as the processor bids are concerned, I can't see that they've backed off any the last couple of days. So there's not a lot of change in the basis. We've had some farmers selling. They're not beating the door down, but we have had some farmers selling into this rally, which is probably a good thing.
It's always farmers are a little hesitant at this time of year for tax reasons to make more sales, I suppose. Although it seems to me that because the tax codes on the federal level have been changed, I think 2 years ago now, to allow them to move money from 1 year to another, that may have eased that burden that they've been working with over the last several years. I wanted to know also how you've been on getting trains and transportation in general. Has it been pretty good at this time of year? Are we still loading a lot of trains out?
We are getting trains enough to keep open, and we've even got all of it. We had a pretty good-sized corn pile. We've got it all picked up, and it got a little tight a couple times, but basically the farmers have not been moving a lot up until this week, and we've taken, you know, a lot of the carry out of the market, so a lot of them just feel like, you know, they're going to go ahead and beat the crowd and start hauling in right away. But we've been fine on space, and transportation seems to have let up a little bit, and, yeah, so we're doing okay on room.
Wait, let me check something. You have a corn pile there in town?
Well, we can't stack on site, Todd. We have a site that we've used in the past about, it's probably about 4 or 5 miles from here, so we have to haul clear down here just to keep the elevator
open. When you said you had a corn pile, I was just a bit surprised. I was thinking because your elevator, of course, is located in the middle of Terre Haute, which is a pretty good sized little burg there.
Yeah, we are the only ones, as far as I know, in this area that cannot stack on site. But we did find a location, at least allowed us to stay open anyway.
And your bids for the day are?
All right, our cash corn today is $1.90. Cash beans are $5.78. New crop wheat is $3.18.
We appreciate you being with us, Kay.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner. Right now, your local newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A group trying to unionize visiting academic professionals at the University of Illinois says it's won a victory in court. The Association of Academic Professionals says a state appellate court has ruled against the U of I's request to place a hold on bargaining with the group after members voted to form the union. AAP Vice President Cesar Morales Romero says the university should join them now at the bargaining table. The U of I has not yet issued a reply. Indiana has joined with Illinois in an effort to lure a clean coal-burning power plant to the Illinois Coal Basin, which includes parts of Indiana and Kentucky. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels announced the joint effort today. In addition to generating electricity, the clean coal process makes hydrogen through coal gasification, and the carbon dioxide generated by the plant will be stored and used in the process of extracting more oil out of old oil fields. Indiana's Attorney General will ask a federal judge to reconsider his ruling limiting the type of prayers the Indiana House may use to open its sessions. The November 30th ruling declared that the prayers cannot use the name of Jesus Christ or Christian terms. A former Illinois Secretary of State official testified at George Ryan's racketeering and fraud trial today that lobbyists were crucial in getting him his job. Frank Cavallaro says he was hired as the Secretary of State computer chief after being questioned by a lobbyist for IBM, who asked if he would support replacing an old state computer with an IBM model. After he said he would support the IBM purchase, Cavallaro says he got the job. IBM later got the sale. However, Cavallaro says IBM's proposal was better for the state. President Bush is expected to sign a bill passed by the U.S. House last night giving the penny a makeover in time for Abraham Lincoln's bicentennial. The redesigned pennies will be issued in 2009 and feature four designs on the coin's reverse side: Lincoln's Kentucky birthplace, his youth in Indiana, his professional life in Illinois, and his presidency in Washington. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined now by Drew Lerner. He's the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing okay. Hope you're doing the same.
I'm doing very well. Kind of dreary. It was a bit snowy, almost rainy this afternoon. Kind of gray here in the Midwest. Can we expect that to change?
Well, not really. I'm afraid we'll see a little break in the action here for a little while, but what's going to take place is for the Indiana side of the line, we'll probably find snow increasing again as we go through the afternoon and into the night. There'll be a little disturbance coming out of the Delta that will move through eastern portions of Tennessee and into the Carolinas, Virginia. Will be enough backwash on this particular storm system to generate some greater snowfall across Ohio, and it will catch the easternmost sections of Indiana, probably 1 to 3 inch snows in eastern Indiana, and probably 3 to 6 in Ohio. Illinois probably will take a little bit of a break, though, on precipitation for a little while. We'll see some snow showers, snow flurry activity, maybe a little freezing drizzle for a little while. And then tonight, and especially tomorrow, we'll start to pick up on some light snowfall again across the region. It will probably not accumulate to an inch, or absolutely most will be 2 inches, and I don't think that will take place. I think most it will be an inch or less. But it will be dreary around for a couple of days after that. I don't see the sun coming out in significant quantities again until sometime probably during the weekend or even early next week. So it will be kind of dreary for a little while.
At one point we were expecting some fairly cold temperatures, a bit of an Arctic blast. Is that still in the works?
Absolutely, it is. It's a slow-moving cold air mass, so once it gets here, it's going to hang around for a little while. My guess is that our coldest days will probably be begin on Saturday. More likely, it'll be Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday that will be so very cold across the region. Afternoon temperatures in the teens and 20s across the lower Midwest, upper Midwest, single digits and teens. We'll probably find ourselves looking at some sub-zero temperatures as far south as northern Illinois, northern Indiana. By the time we get into the early part of next week, there is hope, though, that the Christmas holiday weekend will be a lot better across the region with a warming trend expected. It may not be normal, or it may not be above normal, but we should see be seeing temperatures closer to normal, and it looks like our precipitation potentials will be on the low side. I can't guarantee it'll be dry, but it doesn't look too bad, and no major storms at this point.
And a quick update on the warmer temperatures. I'm sure that Argentina and Brazil are enjoying at this point.
Absolutely. Conditions in South America right now are just about ideal. I think there's been some concern about dryness in parts of Argentina. The midday models today all suggesting an increase in precipitation is very likely in Argentina as we get into the weekend and especially early next week. If that verifies, and I think it probably will, we'll see enough precipitation across the country that the dryness pockets will be reduced in size and number, and we'll probably be able to go another good 10 days or so without worrying about any serious crop stress. And in Brazil, there's no need to worry about dryness at all. The country is plenty moist. There's a little bit of drying occurring in the south right now, but it will start to rain as we get close to the weekend. So there's no issues there. There's a few spots in the north that are a little bit too wet, but I think that's the extreme of it all.
Drew, we thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget, you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and the weather right there on our website. Just go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click on AM, and then Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason.